I want to welcome a new sponsor to SliceOffice.com. The attorneys at Gingrich, Thompson, and Wachs have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which they live and work. If you want a personal attorney that can help you in so many different areas, they've got them. They're in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to reach. GTWLawyers.com. That's GTWLawyers.com. And welcome to another podcast at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at the Operating Engineers, Local 139, Madison Firefighters, Local 311, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and of course, the Madison Teamsters, Local 695. Joining us now from Germany, our friend John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. Comrade, thanks for coming on with us.
Comrade, I couldn't be with a better soul.
All right, well, let's start out with, I understand the historic impeachment trial started, but let's start out with what's going on with Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. By the way, Bernie Sanders, as far as Wisconsin goes today, got a very important endorsement from Congressman Mark Pocan.
You tell me, what's the bigger deal? I mean, I'm not trying to diminish the CNN's effort to make a story here. And I think, you know, who knows? We'll talk about it a little bit more in a second. But I will tell you that when the history of the 2020 race is written, to my view, the fact that Bernie Sanders got the endorsement of Mark Pocan, who is, I would argue, one of the most skilled political thinkers and strategists and activists on the left, not just in Wisconsin but nationwide, will matter more than whatever argument is going on between Sanders and Warren.
All right. Well,
I'll stick to that view.
All right. Well, it certainly was an important endorsement. He did not get it last time. Pocan stayed out of it, but obviously got in a bind with the whole super delegate situation. But this really was a big day in that regard. All right, so here's here's what happened at the debate the other night, and I'm sure you've heard this, but we'll play it again.
Let's now turn to an issue that's come up in the last 48 hours. Senator Sanders, CNN reported yesterday that, and Senator Warren confirmed in a statement that in 2018 you told her that you did not believe that a woman could win the election. Why did you say that?
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't say it. And I don't want to waste a whole lot of time on this because this is what Donald Trump and maybe some of the media want. Anybody knows me knows that it's incomprehensible that I would think that a woman could not be president of the United States. Go to YouTube today. There's a video of me 30 years ago talking about how a woman could become president of the United States. In 2015, I deferred, in fact, to Senator Warren. There was a movement to draft Senator Warren to run for president. And you know what? I said, stayed back. Senator Warren decided not to run, and I did run afterwards. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 3 million votes. How could anybody in a million years not believe that a woman could become president of the United States? And let me be very clear. If any of the women on this stage or any of the men on this stage win the nomination, I hope that's not the case. I hope it's me. But if they do, I will do everything in my power to make sure that they are elected in order to defeat the most dangerous president in the history of our country.
So, Senator Sanders, I do want to be clear here. You're saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election.
That is correct.
And Senator Warren, what did you think when Senator Sanders told you a woman could not win the election?
What's that? What is that?
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable. It's literally incomprehensible. I mean, it's if you were doing a Saturday Night Live parody of unimaginably bad and biased questioning, that is what you would do, right? I mean, or it, you probably even then would think that would be too absurd. It would be too cheap a laugh line. It was stunning. I you know, of course, it's good to ask the question. The issue did arise. It's legitimate to ask. But you ask the two candidates the exact same question.
That was okay. So we know the answer that Warren gave, and she had her pat answer, and we know Bernie came back and said, "I did defeat a Republican." But now we have.
I think you called me a liar on national TV. I think you called me a liar on national TV.
Let's not do it right now. You want to have that discussion? We'll have that discussion. You called me. You told me. All right. Let's not do it now.
I don't want to get in the middle, but I just want to say hi, Bernie.
Yeah. Good.
It's true.
Okay.
This is
good.
Tom Steyer.
The best thing there. No, Tom Steyer is the star of the debate. Just that right there. Did you know today? Did you know today he tweeted, "I just wanted to say hi." Just that. And I think like thousands of people retweeted. It'll become like he ought to get. Tom Steyer ought to do 5-second TV commercials where he just says, "I just wanted to say hi." It was fabulous. It was perfect. And more illuminating than the moment, because I mean, here's the troublesome thing about what occurred there, right? We have to presume that neither Elizabeth Warren nor Bernie Sanders presumed that what they said in that post-debate exchange would be broadcast, right? That it would be picked up. Now, that's a wrong assumption because, of course, they were on a stage. There were microphones around. But I think it's fair to say that...
It's kind of like when Dick Cheney said to George Bush about the reporter from the New York Times calling him a major league asshole,
Adam,
right?
Adam Primer. Or some other incidents like that. But in fairness to Elizabeth Warren and to Bernie Sanders, my presumption is that they did not expect that was going to be broadcast. It has now ended up, you know, going viral. It's every place. And so we have to talk about it, but we should talk about it honestly and you know, as realistically as we can here. She came over and said, "I think you called me a liar on national television." And he did not call her a liar.
Not even
close. He did not say, Elizabeth Warren is lying about me or is lying here. In answer to a question, he said that something that other people were suggesting had happened, not just her but others, that it didn't happen. He said, "I didn't," and he didn't even say she's, you know, wrong or something like that. He just simply said, "I didn't say that," and he was very firm on it. And frankly, he tried to turn it in a different direction. In fairness to her, and this is important as well, in fairness to her, she also, I think in her answers on that, made some effort to dial it down, right? But the problem here goes beyond these two folks, and it really goes to a part of our political reality. If you're in the position that Elizabeth Warren's in, and I honestly don't know whether she was aware that this was going to be leaked, right, that this suggestion was going to go into the media. I don't know the backstory on it. I can tell you that, you know, it'll eventually be much discussed. But once it came out, once she was asked about it, she had one of two ways to go. And the first way to go is, I remember it as clear as day. I sat there with Bernie Sanders, a guy I respected, and he told me a woman couldn't be elected president of the United States. There's no lack of clarity on that. That's what he said. And it was something that really troubled me. I hadn't talked about it before, but now that it's come out, I'll say very bluntly, I think he was wrong, and I really think it showed me something I didn't like about the way he thought, right? That she goes deep in and says it very, very strongly. Or you say, Bernie Sanders and I have been friends for a long time. We've worked together on a lot of issues. I have enormous respect for him. in this campaign. I've had enormous respect for him leading up to this campaign. We've had many private discussions, and they are just that, private discussions. I am not going to talk about it, right? You do one thing or the other, but you can't go down the middle on it. You can't, you know, kind of say, suggest he said something, but not give much detail on it.
You know,
it ended up in a very
bigger picture. If this is meant to be a redux of identity politics from 2016, and that, you know, the whole thing in Bernie Bros and the attacks, and, you know, Bernie's a guy and he's a white male. I've noticed as, you know, the debate stage has shrunk and the minority candidates are gone. It doesn't seem like this year people that are voting are caring too much about identity politics. Because, frankly, if it weren't for older African-Americans in South Carolina and other states, Joe Biden wouldn't be in this race, right? So it just kind of seems like that people are not really into this sort of divisive politics this year with gender and with race.
Well, look, gender and race are a part of our politics.
Well, yes, they are.
They underpin it.
But they're not the driving force in the Democratic primary. Not this year.
I think the driving force of the Democratic primary this year, tell me if I'm wrong, is Donald Trump.
Yes.
Right? I mean, there's a focus on Trump. And
we didn't talk much. We didn't talk much about him abusing the War Powers Act the other night. Not so much.
We should talk about it more.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. If Donald Trump is the driving force, then we move to another reality, which is that the central challenge, the central issue is electability, right? Who do people think can win the race? I think that it's true that electability is an incredibly powerful force and a reality here. But I'm going to push back on you a little bit and say that in that sense, this exchange, this back and forth with Sanders and Warren, it was, or at least had some element of an electability debate in it, right? And I don't mind that people confront that. I don't mind that people, you know, raise these issues and talk about them. I happen to believe that this country not only can but will elect a woman president. And I think it was well noted in the debate that a woman in 2016 got 2.9 million more votes than the man in November. And so I think it's valid to confront what I believe is a falsehood, you know, the suggestion that a woman can't win. And I think that discussing it, arguing about it, beyond the realm of personalities, is a healthy thing.
Yeah.
It's fine to put it forward. The trouble here is that when there is, this seems to me to be a moment that I actually believe in looking at Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, whether you like how they handle things or not. I think that you could tell this is something that they're both very uncomfortable with, right? This isn't, I don't think this is something that they sought. They've ended up in this circumstance and there's this clash. I think what it is something that the media, particularly CNN, really sort of desperately wants they want to have.
I think you're too kind. I agree with you that Warren's probably not comfortable with it, but she's desperate and so is her campaign team. And they wanted to use it as a cudgel against Bernie. And we'll see how it plays out, but I would say so far it doesn't look like it's worked a whole lot. We're going to take a
break. No, I think.
Go ahead.
I was going to say I think that one of the things that it did, at least to my observation, is it seems to have led an awfully lot of the women who are backing Bernie Sanders to turn the volume up.
Indeed. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Slysoffice.com, brought to you by our friends at the Operating Engineers Local 139.
I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep Slysoffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from Slysoffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
We're back at Slysoffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works and Jeff's Guitar Clinic. All right, joining us again, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Well, have you ever seen anything like what's going on right now in this administration, not with one foreign scandal with what they did with Ukraine, but what happened in Iraq with the dropping of the bomb and killing the general and essentially lying about it? We don't have one scandal, John. We've got two.
Right. Well, it's big scandals. And look, this is the fundamental reality. Donald Trump was not prepared to be president of the United States.
You think?
There's a deeper thing here. He ran for president, I think, because he wanted to up his brand, to become better known. He ended up as president of the United States. He had two choices. One was to surround himself with competent, skilled people and to trust them or respect them. The second was to continue to be Donald Trump, right? To go with your gut. Initially, it looked like Donald Trump might actually try to build an administration that had at least a few people who I happen to be very critical of. I wrote a book criticizing him. But at least a few people who had some competence and had some basic skills. They had been very right-wing, but they at least were competent. They've all been chased out, Sly. Donald Trump is surrounded by people who are, you know, sub-minimum, right? They're not ready. They're not ready, you know, for prime time in any country or in any circumstance. And so this is a guy who is following his own instincts. There may actually be somebody from the State Department, the Pentagon, who comes in who actually is competent and presents some alternatives. But Donald Trump picks the most dangerous alternative, the most desperate, the most weird. And then beyond that, he's clearly got his own agendas, his own approaches to things. And it's a mess. And the trouble with Donald Trump is he, in my view, he is an incredibly unformed man. He is a damaged character who, you know, can't take responsibility for things and can't, you know, recognize when he's made mistakes or even when he's about to make a mistake. And we should not be surprised that this happens to be all coming out now and coming at us in bigger and more troubling ways, especially as he gets more desperate facing impeachment and facing a difficult reelection. And I will tell you, if the Republicans in the U.S. Senate were honest players, if they cared about this country, they would remove this guy from office.
Well, now we're in a situation where it's not just him. You can't take everything that he says verbatim, but he's bringing a paper.
You can't take it seriously.
Well, but you can take enough of it seriously where he's got a paper trail. And
oh, yeah.
There's lots of dots that are connecting here, John.
You want to know something, Sly? A number of years ago, when it was revealed who Deep Throat was, I said to an older reporter who'd been around Washington for a long time, I said, oh, man, that's kind of a bummer. It turned out Deep Throat was sort of a self-serving guy who was had a grudge against the Nixon administration. He wasn't some noble individual who came forward with revelations about something they had stumbled onto. And this reporter, wiser person than I, said, you know, the people that end up taking down presidents are almost never good guys, right? It's almost always a rat turning on another rat. And so I think we've got, I think this guy pretty much came from central casting in that regard,
well,
right?
And now we've got this drunk guy from Connecticut.
I know.
I mean, then...
Could you make it up?
Something major kind of boomeranged here on Trump. Here he got tried to get two different Ukrainian governments, you know, a president and then a successor, to open an investigation against Joe Biden. And now the Ukrainian government is essentially opening up an investigation against Donald Trump for what they did to our ambassador to the Ukraine.
I know. And but at the end of the day, Donald Trump maybe sometime in the future, he's going to realize that that phone call he made to the president of Ukraine
Wasn't so perfect.
He likes to keep calling it perfect, but you know he's going to recognize that it wasn't perfect. And here's the interesting thing. Somebody asked me tonight. I was doing a talk, and somebody said, "Why go forward with impeachment when you know that the Senate isn't going to do it?" And I said, at this point, we are dealing with such important revelations as regards this president and his irresponsibility, his dangerous behaviors, that we need to know it all. We need the whole story. And then if Ron Johnson, a material witness, a fact witness to these circumstances, if Ron Johnson decides to keep this guy as president with all of these revelations, including revelations that show he did things that Ron Johnson had tried quite desperately to avert, if he decides that his loyalty to Donald Trump is greater than his loyalty to the Constitution of the United States and to the good of this country, well, then impeachment's important. It's very important to go forward. It's very important to have the Senate vote, because we need to get a permanent record of the people who don't care enough about their country and don't care enough about simple issues of right and wrong. We need to know their names, and we need to be very conscious of that at election time.
People have lost a lot of faith in institutions long before Donald Trump came along, and we live in a very tribal country. Will it ever dawn on the 65% of people, according to the Marquette University Law poll, in the Green Bay TV market, that Donald Trump's not doing a good job as president? 65%.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Gordon Hinz tweeted out that the other day. He goes, I'm concerned. Of course.
Okay. I'll tell you right now. That's the easiest question in the world to answer, Sly.
All right. Go for it.
One hiccup on Wall Street. That's what's happening here, Sly. You know it as well as I. Under Barack Obama, a recovery began. It was a slow recovery initially from the 2008 meltdown. It started to gather speed. It continues. In fact, right now it's not as strong on pattern as it was during some points in Obama's presidency, when the economy really was starting to pick up, but it's continued under Trump, and given that. And as long as the economy remains stable, and Donald Trump, who's a masterful showman, masterful self-promoter, continues to claim and associate himself with that improvement in the economy, he'll continue to have of quite a few people who are very impressed with him. But the second, and I mean literally, the second this economy starts to stumble or weaken, as historically, pattern-wise, it tends to, he's finished. He's just done. Because people have made an awful lot of excuses for this guy, I think, based on that. That's at least my view.
So your thoughts as we wrap this up today on what to expect from this impeachment trial and the territory of Chief Justice John Roberts versus Moscow Mitch from Kentucky?
Well, look, it's getting rough for McConnell, isn't it? Don't you think? The revelations of the last few weeks, you know, this thing keeps getting worse day by day. And I have to believe there's at least a handful of Republican senators who are sitting there saying, maybe we should at least try to do this right. Doesn't mean that we won't ultimately vote to keep Trump as president. Doesn't mean that we won't be far more forgiving toward him than we should be. But that at least we should make the effort to have some witnesses, to have something of a legitimate trial. And we're at the pivot point now. It really is a question in the next matter of hours, days, whether a choice is made to not do a charade, you know, a show trial. And if indeed it is just a charade, right, then, you know, the only thing that will matter is going to be that final vote, and we'll get the record of who's on what side, what do they say. And if indeed it's a show trial, we'll move very quickly into the next stages, right? We'll move back into looking at the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary. But it ought to be remembered that the weight of evidence against Donald Trump has dramatically increased since the House votes to impeach. And if it continues to increase at this rate, I certainly hope the House will continue investigations. If it continues to increase at this rate, the burden on Donald Trump, the weight he is carrying, will become significantly more as he heads toward that November election as the first president ever to seek re-election having been impeached. So I think we're in a very significant stage here. And if McConnell and those guys think they're doing Trump a favor by just having a show trial and not looking at the evolving evidence, I will suggest that they're wrong, first off, and also that the potential that Trump might still suffer tremendous political consequences because of what he's done.
Well, a couple interesting conflicting things. You know, some states in the upper Midwest, including Wisconsin, the numbers for impeachment aren't great. But the numbers...
They're not great. But
the numbers for we want a fair trial are very strong. And the numbers of do you feel safer because he killed a general in Iraq and then, of course, had shifting rationalization for it, those aren't great at all. And
aren't great because people got scared last week.
We're not
going to end up in another Middle East war.
We're not done with this Iranian situation. I know people have a 3-second attention span, but this isn't over.
Yeah, I agree. And I will tell you something. At the end of the day, if you want to know what people care about, people care about the economy, and they care about war and peace, right? And I will also say, to their credit, they care about justice. They care about fairness. They care about it as regards human beings, groups of human beings who've historically been discriminated against. There's some honor. There is some honor in the American people. And right now, Donald Trump likes to portray himself as perfect, right, as ideal. But, you know, when people start to look at the circumstance he has really created, especially what he's done on the global stage, the number of incidents, the number of developments that have brought this country into a very dangerous sphere, and the prospect that in another 4 years, he might not be as lucky. We might not be as lucky. I think that makes his re-election a lot harder than some people think. And it may well be that there are, in fact, I would go so far as to tell you the polls show this, that there is at least a portion of people who do not favor his impeachment, or at least his removal, but who are not intending to vote for him. And if you think that's impossible, just remember this, that Scott Walker dodged a recall, but he was eventually voted out of office.
You read my mind. I was going to ask this. As soon as I saw you going down this path, I went, I know what he's going to say next. Indeed. All right. John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. Thanks for coming to SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.